Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lope today. In 2008, in the lead up to the election, we looked at the politics in each state. This year, we're looking at how changes in certain industries over the last 4 years are becoming campaign issues. And we'll be looking at whether they'll play a role in who Americans vote for. We start with the auto industry. Catherine Rempel, an economics reporter for the New York Times, and she joins me now to discuss whether all that's happened to the auto industry over the last 4 years, including the bailout of the major automakers, will sway any votes in the Midwest, particularly in Michigan and Ohio, this coming November. Catherine, good to speak with you.
Good to be here.
Earlier this week, while campaigning in Ohio, President Obama announced that the Federal Trade Commission would be filing a complaint against China with the World Trade Organization because it said that Beijing has been illegally subsidizing its auto parts industry. Will you tell us just a little bit about that?
Well, I think that this is, you know, this is an ongoing debate, first of all, about how the United States should be responding to China's own economic policies, and in particular, their subsidies for domestic manufacturing. And this is something that Romney has gotten on Obama's case for a while. Of course, pretty much anybody who's ever running for office always argues that we need to be tougher on China, but this has clearly been one of the main themes of Romney's campaign in recent weeks. And it appears that, at least in timing, this particular move may have been intended to sort of steal some of Romney's thunder on that point.
Is going after China for protectionism a good way to go after votes in Ohio?
It seems to be very popular. I mean, it's very hard to tell whether there's a one-to-one correlation between, you know, if we make China angry, which this certainly did, is that going to get American voters equally enthusiastic? And I'm not sure that voters are familiar enough with exactly how these trade disputes work, and they take years generally to resolve, that they can really appreciate whether this will actually hurt or help their own pocketbooks. Certainly the attitude is that if the United States at least appears to be getting tougher on China, and in particular if Obama is getting tougher on China, that should endear him to people who either work in the manufacturing industry or who work in some similar industry.
It always amazes me that we get tough with China when we owe them so much money. How does that balancing act work?
Yeah, it's kind of a tough power play, right? You know, the United States' relationship with China is very complicated. You know, it's not like we have this sort of moral or economic high ground anymore upon which to tell China what to do. And there are these international vehicles, you know, like the WTO, for trying to resolve some of that. But a lot of these types of disputes are handled, you know, sort of country to country as opposed to in one of these international organizations. And our economic interests are also tied up with all these other issues that we deal with China on, you know, human rights, particular censorship. So it gets very difficult to sort of lecture a country that we have, that we owe a lot of money to, about how they should be running their economy, let alone how they should be treating their dissidents and everything else. And so it's really hard to talk about any one of these any one of these issues in isolation.
Does putting the focus on China mean that the focus is not on job creation or unemployment numbers? Is there a political aspect to this?
I think a lot of politicians would argue that this is the way of creating jobs. I think that that's probably, if not exactly misguided, it's not the full picture. You know, that they would be, that the government would be arguing, well, we're bringing this case against China because it is hurting U.S. job growth. Of course, there are a lot of other factors that go into whether the U.S. manufacturing industry is doing well and whether it's hiring or laying off workers, including automation, including what kind of prices consumers prefer. I mean, even if China is found guilty effectively of massively subsidizing its auto industry, it has a lot of other things going for it that make it in some ways sort of at a comparative advantage for producing cheaper stuff, whether that's cars or other manufactured products that American consumers are going to buy. So, you know, like I said, it's complicated. I know that people like to talk about these types of issues as sort of a magic bullet for job creation, but there are just so many other factors involved.
Back in November of 2008, famously, Mitt Romney wrote an op-ed that was published in your paper, The New York Times, in which he argued that the government should not bail out the troubled automakers. Do you have an opinion as to what role that played in the fact that he's trailing President Obama in these polls?
He doesn't seem to think it's hurting him. You know, I'm an economics reporter, not a political reporter, so I don't want to draw too many conclusions. But he's still been hammering home this idea that government should not have bailed out the auto companies. He does not seem to be backing away from that particular op-ed. You know, Obama has been touting the fact that General Motors, for example, is still around and has been expanding its operations in some places, and the U.S. auto market seems to be doing a lot better. But there's still sort of an ideological underpinning to this whole discussion about whether the government should be getting involved in bailing out companies in general, this particular industry, specifically. And if you look at a lot of the comments that Romney has made lately, he is again saying that this is a bad idea. I mean, it's very hard to go back and say what history would have looked like in the absence of this sort of government assistance and restructuring. But he is not backing away. So he at least does not seem to appear to regret having written that op-ed.
And this position that he's not backing away from, do you think it plays with independents?
I think to a certain extent it probably does. Like I said, I mean, a lot of this discussion in the election, whether it's about the auto bailout or the 47% or anything else, it's about this sort of underlying ideological divide about the role of government. And there are a lot of people who are still very convinced that government is bigger than it should be, and has been bigger than it should be, and should be, keeping its nose out of everybody else's business in the private sector in particular. And I think that kind of rhetoric is very appealing to those types of voters, whether it's about, hey, Obama oversaw this bailout that was a government intervention in a gigantic private industry, or it's about unemployment insurance or welfare or anything else. So I think that to some extent, these discussions about the auto bailout are kind of a vehicle for tapping into those particular concerns that you hear amongst a lot of independents, but, you know, more so conservative voters.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate, talking with Catherine Rampell. She writes about economics for the New York Times, talking about changes in the auto industry over the last few years. Many of us think of the auto industry being located only in the Midwest, but in her speech at the Democratic National Convention, former Michigan governor, quite animatedly, Jennifer Granholm listed a whole bunch of states where she said jobs had been saved by the auto bailout, including Colorado and Virginia and North Carolina, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Florida, all these big swing states, by the way. Her tally was over 500,000 jobs. Did you agree with that statement?
I mean, certainly the auto industry has its tentacles all over the place, just like a lot of other industries are not as concentrated as people like to think of them as being. There are plants all over the South. There's been more development in the South because southern states are more likely to be right-to-work states than places, you know, sort of classic manufacturing hubs like Detroit, you know, Michigan. So certainly it is true that the auto bailout affected people in lots of other states besides Michigan. That said, it doesn't necessarily mean that just because people's lives may have been improved by this bailout, if you think that's the case, that they are necessarily going to be more sympathetic to Obama. Actually, a colleague of mine, Jim Stewart, had a column recently looking at two towns, I believe they were in Missouri and in Ohio, that had benefited from expansions by General Motors. And in one of those towns, it's still very much expected to vote for Romney, despite the fact that even the people there believe that they were helped by the bailout. And in the other town, I think that the town has traditionally been Democratic and is expected to go for Obama, but the surrounding towns are still expected to go for Romney. So, you know, there are a lot. Voters are famously inscrutable. Who knows why they vote, how they vote.
Well, it's interesting because I think the president thinks this is a clear win for him, and he points it out over and over again. Do you think he's going to continue to hammer this home that he saved the auto industry right up until November 6th?
It sure seems like it. I mean, during the convention, that was one of the big slogans, right, that Osama is dead and General Motors is alive. They clearly thought that this was a big win for them. And I think in terms of, you know, if you think people vote with their pocketbook and they vote for their own self-interest, yeah, this should get them a lot of votes in a lot of these states that are swing states that have a heavy auto industry presence. But it's not always clear that people do vote with their pocketbooks. You know, people vote according to what they think is best for the country, what kind of broader economic ideology appeals to them. People vote based on social issues. So, you know, presented a certain way, it should be a clear win for Obama. But again, that's not necessarily how voters process things.
On a pure economic level, the benefit of the bailout, was that spread out all over these states that we were talking about, more localized in certain towns? Where was the real benefit?
Probably the main benefit was in towns where these plants existed, you know, where people had their jobs on the line and were potentially going to get laid off en masse, you know. And there was talk, if you remember, in late 2008 about General Motors or Chrysler just shutting down for good. So, you know, obviously it didn't quite come to that. But there were a lot of people in areas that are heavy manufacturing towns who had their jobs at risk. That said, you know, there were people who lost as well from the bailout. One of the conditions in 2009 was that there were a lot of, I believe it was General Motors auto dealerships that were shut down. And so people who worked at auto dealerships lost their jobs. So it wasn't, you know, sort of an unabated job creator, if that makes sense, or job saver. So I think you actually do have some mixed economic effects, and depending on where you stand in terms of what specific position you were in or what industry you were in, you might actually be very angry about the bailout taking away your job if you worked at a dealership.
In Ohio, there's a great debate, and of course Ohio, a big swing state, that there's disagreement who actually gets credit for saving the state's economy and the jobs. The Republican governor had a big jobs program. President Obama had the stimulus and the bailout. Who are the Ohio people giving credit to?
You know, I think it depends who you ask. I actually don't know what the latest numbers are today for how Romney and Obama are tracking in Ohio. But it seems like the way that the economy works, you know, it's very hard to trace cause and effect. Economists have kind of, it's been compared in the past, and at least economists have said to me, that economics is kind of like where medicine was, you know, a few hundred years ago, that you kind of have basic ideas of what works and what doesn't work and what's good for you and what's not good for you, but you don't have 100% accuracy. I mean, you know that a lot of money was injected into the auto industry. You know that money was injected into Ohio as a result of the stimulus, but it's very hard to trace what actually created, you know, individual jobs or what actually, you know, helped Joe Black's pension or whatever, or his paycheck. So I think that it's vague enough to the experts, it's ambiguous enough to the experts, that politicians can kind of claim whatever they want to claim and make a decent case at it. And if they have the right rhetoric, then they're able to convince voters.
Let's talk about where the unions stand in all of this. A lot of the auto industry jobs are union jobs, and the Obama administration's had somewhat of a troubled relationship with the unions, given how important unions can be in organizing and getting their members to the polls and in taking out ads and supporting one candidate or another. Where's the Obama campaign in their relationship with the unions these days?
I think it's gotten a lot more complicated recently because of the Chicago teacher strike. I mean, as you said, it's been complicated, or at least less strong than one would normally associate with a Democratic candidate in the last few years. but the teacher strike in particular has probably not helped very much. I mean, not that the Obama administration was directly involved, but Rahm Emanuel was, you know, an Obama guy, and he was the one who was being, you know, was sort of holding up the discussions in, from the union's perspective. So I think that it's possible that the General Motors bailout and success story aside, at least from Obama's telling, you have all of these other particular cases where it's not totally clear that the Obama administration is as close of an ally to the unions as Democrats have traditionally held themselves up to be.
Just one last question. We seemed on such a brink to lose the auto industry. The bailout happened. Is it really solid? Is it really back? And no fear that we might have another big fallout with the auto industry, in your opinion?
Look, it's always very hard to say. But
I won't hold you to it, but I'm just curious where you stand right now.
I mean, from talking with economists, my impression is that the industry is doing a lot better than it was. I'm not sure that, you know, it's ever going to be as strong as it was in the 70s, you know, now that there is more international competition from Japanese automakers, from plants in China, as we were discussing, and elsewhere. And the U.S. auto industry still has major challenges relating to its legacy costs, as they call it, you know, the pensions and retiree benefits,
right,
and everything else,
right,
that they owe for the many workers who are now retired. But it's definitely in a stronger position than it was. The demand for cars in the United States has been doing a lot better than it had been, and that certainly helps them. And I think that they've gotten a little bit more nimble in terms of being able to figure out what kinds of models to sell to their consumers, and not being sort of stuck with the same old structure that they had been dealing with before the bailout. I mean,
right,
one of the conditions of the bailout, as you might recall, is that there was a lot of restructuring that went on in terms of management, in terms of retiree benefits, in terms of everything else, with the whole goal being that the companies would be nimbler today than they were in the past.
Well, you certainly still see a lot of car commercials. I've been speaking about the changes in the auto industry over the past 4 years and whether that would affect the vote in November with Catherine Rampell, who writes about economics for the New York Times, as part of our coverage of how changes in certain regional industries may affect the election. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.